case you're wondering, ladies and gentlemen, I don't go by the town hall clock. It's never been right since the granting of the first charter, I don't think. What I normally do is wait for the cathedral clock to strike nine, but sometimes they catch me out, they'll have a wedding on a Saturday and forget to turn the chimes back on. You'll also notice that the cathedral chimes a few seconds before Trinity Church up the road chimes. We're in different time zones, so don't worry too much about it. I start my operations at that time. I don't want to knock you over a deaf or anything like that.
It's a hornblower telling Sarah to come up there. Come on, come here. Come here. Quite a crowd tonight. Must be nigh on 50 people here. There we go. There we go. Chime in. Here we go. Corner of the monument, blows his horn. And hopefully he'll tell his story.
Last blow, I nearly lost my false teeth. Right. My name's Paul Schofield, and the more observant amongst you will have gathered that I'm your hornblower for this evening. Now, this is probably one of the oldest continuous traditions in the British Isles today. It goes back, we think, to the year 886. Now, our Victorian forefathers came up with the tale that it was as a result of the granting of a charter to the city of Ripon by King Alfred the Great. That's a load of rubbish. There may be those amongst you who are far better students of Anglo-Saxon English history than I, and they will have read the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle and found out that in the year 886 King Alfred was rather too busy down in London kicking the Vikings out. In fact, Alfred the Great, he was born in Wantage in Oxfordshire, and throughout his long and illustrious career, he never got much further north of Watford Gap Services on the M1. It's far more likely that if any charters were granted to the city of Ripon in the Dark Ages, they'd be granted by his grandson, King Athelstan. Now, Athelstan, who came to the throne about 25 years after Alfred's death, is the first king that could call himself a king of a united England. He sealed this by winning a big battle, the Battle of Brunanburh, in the year 935. Now, the Battle of Brunanburh is a good illustration of what the Dark Ages is all about. We know what year the battle was fought in, we know who it was fought between, and we even know the year of the battle. And we've narrowed down the site of the battle to somewhere between Glasgow and the outskirts of Northampton. Modern scholarship seems to think it was fought in a golf course in Birkenhead. But there you go, that's the Dark Ages for you. But anyway, somewhere around that time, the city of Ripon appointed a wakeman. Now, a wakeman, well, it does what it says on the tin, really, is a bloke that keeps awake during the hours of darkness to make sure nothing untoward happens. Which, of course, there wasn't a police force in those days. And so the wakeman had to make sure that everybody could sleep safely in their beds. He signified that he was on duty by blowing a horn four times on the corners of what was then the Market Cross to signify the curfew had been set, the wakeman was on duty. The word curfew, by the way, isn't sort of something that means you've got to stay indoors all night. It comes from the French, couvre feu, which means it's the time you sort of bank the fire up for the night. That's where that comes from. So I learnt the other day. Anyway, this wakeman was appointed by and from the 15 most important people in the city of Ripon. And once the wakeman was chosen, he duly appointed the other 14 as his constables. So it was a pretty close shop, really. Anyway, this happy state of affairs continued more or less in the same vein right up to the year 1604. Now, you'll appreciate that between the Dark Ages and 1604, nothing much happened, really. We had a couple of major civil wars, Norman Conquest, Black Death. We were more or less permanently at war with France. And we had a little bit of trouble with those people north of Hadrian's Wall coming up and over that wall, coming down south and creating mayhem. It still happens. It's usually busloads of Geordies on race days. Anyway, in that time, Ripon became quite a prosperous place. This was greatly helped by the coming to England in the 12th century of the Cistercian monks. The Cistercian order was founded by St. Bernard of Clairvaux, And a few years later, they came across to England. Now, these Cistercians were big sheep farmers, and they found it for fairly big houses quite close to Ripon. We've got Fountains Abbey, about a mile up the road. There's Jervo Abbey near Midland. Then further east, we've got Byland Abbey and Revo Abbey, which is the oldest of the four. It was founded 6 months before Fountains, and is where I'm from originally. I wasn't a monk, I know I've got the haircut for it, but there we go. And as I say, Ripon prospered with the wool industry, and later on with the cloth industry as well. In fact, after York and Halifax, Ripon was the most important place in Yorkshire for cloth. Again, this was greatly helped by King Edward III banning the import of foreign cloth in the middle of the 14th century. Unfortunately, as happens in life, good things never last. And by the time we get to the 16th century, the wheels had started to come up and come off the truck a bit. This was, in many ways, the fault of Henry VIII. I might be biased, I don't like the Tudors. I'm a big Richard III fan. Anyway, Henry VIII wanted to get rid of his first wife. The unfortunate thing was that Catherine of Aragon just happened to be the auntie of the Holy Roman Emperor, a guy called Charles V. And on hearing about Henry's machinations, Charles goes running to the Pope and says, "Hey, Your Holiness, this guy in England, Henry, is trying to sack me auntie Cap. Do something about it, will you?" I mean, all right, it was a Spanish Habsburg, but he had a bit of a Yorkshire accent, And the Pope says, "Hey, Henry, you can't have a divorce. I don't want any Holy Roman invasions on me hands." Henry says, "Buttons to you, mate, then I'll found my own religion." So the Church of England was established, and the monasteries were shut down. Now, where Ripon was concerned, this had a twofold effect. It severely knocked the wool industry on the head, but rather more importantly, it took away the restraining hand of the church from these wakemen, and matters started to get a bit out of hand. In fact, the market square began to look a bit like a punishment theme park. They were putting people in the tying people to posts, and whipping them and putting them in the stocks. In fact, there's a little article in the Town Book of Ripon of 1598 that says, "If anybody doth misuse or bycall the wakeman with slanderous, opprobrious or scurrilous words, they shall be put in the stocks for a period of a day and a night." So watch it, okay? Anyway, cut a long story short, Queen Elizabeth I, the last Tudor monarch, dies in 1603. And she's succeeded by her nephew, King James VI of Scotland, who became James I of England. The following year, 1604, he pays Ripon a visit. And he's a bit taken aback by what he saw. All these people dangling from the trees and having rotten tomatoes dripping down their faces. Etc., etc., etc. He says, "Come on," he says, "let's have a proper going on here. You wakemen have got, you've got far too big for your own boots. You've got a nice little city here, and I'd dearly love to grant you a proper written charter. But I want a proper going on. Get yourselves a mayor, a proper mayor elected, and have this mayor chosen from a much broader cross section of the community." Now, you don't argue with James I, as Guy Fawkes found out to his cost the following year. So, a mayor was duly elected, and the first mayor of Ripon was a chap called Hugh Ripley. Now, Hugh used to live in that house in the southwest corner of the market square there, the one with the four bay windows and that little attic window. And he'd been a wakeman in the past. And he says, "Look, I've been appointed mayor now, and obviously I can't go round blowing horns on market squares. For one thing, I'm a mayor, it's a bit below my dignity. And another thing, to mayoral chains will get tangled up with straps on. Oh. So what I'm going to do is appoint a horn blower to do the job for me. But I know what a dodgy bunch of characters new types that blow horns can be. You'd much rather spend time supping ale in taverns than going around on market squares blowing horns. He's got a fair point. So, Mr. Hornblower, what I want you to do is, once you've set the watch on the four corners of the market square, is get your backside round to wherever the mayor is, sound your horn a further 3 times, raise your hat, bow your head, and say the words, "Mr. Mayor, the watch is set." So once I've finished talking to you good people, that's what I've got to do. I've got to go and play hide and seek with the mayor. Now, it just so happens that this particular mayor is very good. He'll normally let me know where he is. A carrier pigeon will descend on me windowsill, or a messenger with a cleft stick will come knocking on me front door. Or sometimes he'll just email me a text. But I'm a careful sort of a lad. So what I'm going to do is use my get-out clause. I'm going to blow the horn 3 times on the town hall steps. And then go and try and find the mayor. I can do this because there is a lamppost above the front door of the town hall that says His Worshipfulness the Mayor have written on it. And there's another reason. Because there is a legend that if the horn isn't blown to Hugh Ripley's satisfaction, his ghostly face will appear at the attic window and all manner of misery, madness and mayhem will descend on Ripon and its hornblower in particular. Now, I've had a few glowings of ectoplasm round the corners of the window, but so far I think I've got away with it, but I don't want to push my luck too far. So basically, ladies and gentlemen, that's what hornblowing's all about. The hornblower works for the mayor of the day. Now, to assist us in the execution of our duties, we've got a number of horns that's kicking about the city, 3 of which we blow. The one I'm blowing is an African ox horn. It's the biggest of the 3 that's blown. And it was bought for the city by the mayor of the day in 1850. My colleague, George Pickles, our regular horn blower, blows the most modern horn that we've got. It's a mere youth of a thing. It was, again, kindly bought for the city by a local antiques firm in 1986 to commemorate what was then thought to be 1,100 years of horn blowing in Ripon. George blows it because it's a sight easier to blow than this thing. It's got a proper tenor horn mouthpiece. There's a lot more metal on it. It's copper instead of brass on George's. And you make a lot more noise on it, and George reckons it looks prettier. I like this one though. It's a bit of a razzy mouthpiece, but it's quite nice. And the third horn, which we don't blow very often, goes back to 1690. We don't blow it very often because it is getting quite venerable. And the other reason is, it's the only horn that the city of Ripon has ever had to cough up for out of municipal funds. It cost them 6 shillings and 8 pence. Now, you might not think that that's a lot. I mean, for you younger people, 6 shillings and 8 pence is 34 pence in today's money, and you can't get a packet of polos for that now. But in 1690, it was a heck of a lot to be paying for a horn. In fact, the old Yorkshire phrase resounded throughout the council chamber. How much? 6 and 8 per horn? Nay, what's the world coming to? I've been on Valium ever since. And then there are a couple of ceremonial horns that we that's usually carted about on civic occasions. There's one that goes back to 1886, and another one is, we don't know the exact age of it. I think the mayor does. They've had it carbon dated, but nobody's saying now. It's early medieval, put it that way. And you may have noticed there's another horn, that's the one that's stuck on top of the obelisk. Now, the obelisk was commissioned at the back end of the 18th century. The date is on there in Roman numerals, if you can be bothered to work it out. And it had been stuck for about 100 years, when in 1889 it started dropping to bits. You see, obelisks are rather prone to erosion in these windy northern climes. Anyway, while they had the scaffolding up, they thought it'd be a right good idea to stick a horn on top of the obelisk. I mean, the horn has long been the symbol of the city of Ripon. And into this horn they put 12 gold sovereigns and said, right, we'll leave it up there for 100 years or so, and then we'll have a look in and see what's what. Didn't quite last the 100 years, because in 1986 it had fallen into a state of disrepair again. As I say, obelisks are rather prone to erosion. Up went the scaffolding, they got the obelisk all nicely pointed up, and had a look in the horn to see whether the 12 gold sovereigns were still there. Well, of course they weren't. All they found was an empty crisp packet and the bill for the 1889 repairs, which somebody had forgot to hand into the town hall. And it just so happened that in 1986, Her Majesty the Queen had paid Ripon a visit to present the Maundy money, which she does every Easter, a penny for each year of her reign. So in 1986, it would be what? 34 pennies. Somehow, don't ask me how, the City Council managed to get their hands on some of this Maundy money. So that's what's happened, ladies and gentlemen. That horn is now bumped full of Maundy money, and there it shall remain for another 100 years, de Valente. So, if anybody's around in 2086, you're all quite welcome to come and see what's what. Right, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Has anybody got any questions they'd like me to avoid answering the best way I can? If you can think of anything, I'll be in one-eyed rat later. Right, thank you very much. It's nice to have such a good crowd to talk to.
How long have you been doing it?
Oh, not long, about 5 minutes or so. about 3 years now. Well, can't you tell I'm a rank amateur? Can't even blow it on properly. Has anybody else got any questions? Speak now or forever hold your peace, sort of thing. It's worse than the verb there. No, thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Right, with your permission, I shall nip across the road, so if you miss taking photographs, about through turning up later, out like that, you can have another go. Thank you very much.
This is what Mr. Pickles didn't do. Outside the town hall, doffing his hat. The watch is set. He's just announced to the mayor. off he wanders out of the marketplace in the direction of the cathedral. Everyone else in the marketplace is now loitering, taking in, absorbing and regurgitating what he's just said. Great stories.
All one word.
All one word.
Out.
One word.
Out.
One word.
Out.
Out.